What do embedded journalists think of the embed system? What do they think of the war itself? These aren't the kind of questions journalists are often asked. How they feel or think isn't really part of the who, what, when, where, and why of journalism. But Wall Street Journal embedded reporter Fanaz Fasihi mulled over these questions in a personal email to friends and family. The email, somehow, got beyond Fasihi's circle and kept getting forwarded around the world. Her email proved to be very controversial. Some reporters criticized Fasihi for not being an objective journalist, but not Mike Hoyt, the executive editor of the Columbia Journalism Review. In fact, he encouraged his staff to ask other embeds similar questions. Their answers are compiled in the book Reporting Iraq, an oral history of the war by the journalists who covered it. Mike Hoyt read some of Fanaz Fasihi's email to Steve Paulson.
She said being a foreign correspondent in Baghdad these days is like being under virtual house arrest. I leave when I have a very good reason to and at a scheduled interview. I avoid going to people's homes and never walk in the streets. I can't go grocery shopping anymore, can't eat in restaurants, can't strike a conversation with strangers, can't look for stories, can't drive in anything but a full armored car, can't go to scenes of breaking news stories, can't be stuck in traffic, can't speak English outside, can't take a road trip, can't say I'm an American, can't linger at checkpoints, can't be curious about what people are saying, doing, feeling, and can't.
So you couldn't do what she'd always done as a reporter anymore.
She was very frustrated. You know, she was worried about the way things were going. She said the genie of terrorism, chaos, and mayhem has been unleashed into this country as a result of American mistakes. Some editor types thought she had sort of broken a journalistic rule of putting some opinion and emotion in. We thought it was great. It kind of broke through a barrier and helped you understand what it was like in Iraq, which was, you know, her job.
Did that email resonate with a lot of other reporters who were covering Iraq?
Some were critical of it. They said it diminished what they were able to do. But most of them, I think, thought it was right on the money.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to quote something from your book. It's Deborah Amos of NPR who said, "In the early days, we were up against an incredibly powerful spin machine that accused us of only telling the bad news. And so it was very hard to get that information out." So it sounds like there was a lot of pressure to report good news. Was this pressure coming from the government itself or also coming from newspaper editors?
I think for the most part it was coming from the Coalition Provisional Authority during the period when they ran Iraq and Mr. Bremer and company, which employed a lot of political hacks and frankly a lot of propagandists and who wanted to hear what they wanted to hear. And they'd have these press conferences and reporters would one after another say, you know, I'm not seeing what you're describing. And there was tremendous tension there, you know, sort of an unspoken message that you're not with the program. You know, you're just a, you know, an America hater. Or you don't like the military, whatever. And yet the story, you know, that reporters to a man and a woman more or less said that, you know, they were not there to tell the good news or the bad news. They were there to tell the story. And the story at that period was, you know, pretty awful, moving from uncontrolled chaos to insurrection and then edging toward civil war.
And suddenly it wasn't safe for especially American reporters to go out without a military escort. I mean, they could easily get killed.
Some of them certainly did get killed and others came close. Dexter Filkins of the New York Times tells a kind of harrowing story in our book of coming across the car bomb scene and the whole crowd turning on him and his driver, you know, blaming him for it. You know, he didn't see the logic, but he wanted to get out of there, and he barely got out. I mean, they counted some 30 rocks thrown at the car when they got out of there. He had a very large driver who grabbed him and pulled him in, and he says the crowd almost physically held the car back, but they managed to get away. And there were just a lot of stories like that.
So one of the responses then was you didn't really want to go out there just with a driver trying to get these stories yourself. It was a lot easier, a lot safer to go with an American military unit.
At some point, you couldn't go by yourself. And also, you know, even before this point, you certainly saw certain aspects of the war by going with the military. I mean, I think the good reporters worked hard at trying to do other kinds of information gathering. You know, you do get the military perspective when you're with the military, and the civilians are not likely to talk to you, or they're not likely to talk to you the way they would if a lot of people with big guns were not nearby.
You have a number of comments from reporters who weigh in on the whole embed system. Could you read a few of those?
Yeah. Patrick Colbert The Independent, very tough, brave reporter who actually spent some time with people who were slowly developing into insurgents early in the war. He said, I think it's a great mistake to go with American units and report on any Iraqi city, because I think it's in the nature of things that you're not actually meeting local people, and if you are, you aren't meeting them in circumstances in which they can actually speak. But I think he's in the minority. I mean, I think most reporters think that you're going to learn a lot more by embedding than not embedding. To me, one of the quotes that sums this up is Tom Lasseter from Knight Ridder, or former Knight Ridder. He says, to me, not embedding is like not going to a mosque. I can't imagine going to Iraq without spending the time I've spent in mosques there, and I can't imagine having gone to Iraq without spending the time that I've spent embedding. I mean, it's just part of the story. It's how you see the parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, this whole question, I mean, this has been an incredibly difficult war to cover well, just because of all the restrictions on reporters. And these are incredibly dedicated journalists. But it does raise the question of how good a picture of the Iraq war we're getting around the world. What's your sense of that?
I think it depends on when you're asking. I think for a while there, we were getting a pretty good picture. But if you're talking about now, I think it's a failure, actually. I think something's going on now that's kind of dangerous. I mean, there's not much coverage of the war now, and it's sort of dramatic. And I think it reflects just a lack of interest. I mean, I think America's tired of hearing about the war.
Do all the problems in terms of covering this war raise some fundamental issues of how conventional journalism can do it? I mean, the problems of getting multiple sources, for instance, fact-checking. I mean, it's just extremely difficult to do there. I'm wondering if the so-called objective standards of journalism just don't work very well.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I think reporters have done tremendous work over there, done very well. I do think, and doing this book kind of made me come to this thinking, that there needs to be a lot of thought given to the conventions of journalism, the form, the kind of fairly dry, objective way we tell stories. I mean, back to Farnaz Fasihi, when she did that email and it gone public, she got emails from readers afterwards who said, you know, why didn't you tell us it was that bad in Iraq? And she was shocked. She said, you tell me that you're a regular reader of the Wall Street Journal, you've read my stuff, I did tell you. But the fact is she told them in conventional objective prose and this sort of first person, hard-hitting, somewhat emotional thing that she wrote just broke through that barrier. And I'm not in favor of all reporters just going out and sharing their feelings and so forth, but people like this who have been there 2, 3, 4 years and really know the situation, they have an authority that I think we should loosen the reins and let them write in first person or whatever it takes. I think that kind of writing, that kind of form would get at a more essential truth, I think.
Can you give me an example of that? Something you could pull from your book? Maybe we could end on this note of a reporter who's just telling it like it is.
You know, there's one that comes to mind. It might take me a minute to find it. Mm-hmm. Skaith Abdul Ahad from The Guardian and Getty Images. He was a photographer and a writer and a very articulate guy. I've had people tell me, when you go to car bomb scenes, try to take these pictures that suggest the scene without really showing the goriness of the scene. But I'm sorry, what do I do? Just turn around and take a picture of the crying woman instead of taking a picture of the dying bodies? Again, I feel very strongly about this thing. People should see. People should realize. It's really ugly out there. And you should see it. You can't censor reality. You can't censor the war. You can't always be sensitive to the feelings of your readers because it's reality. We're trying to cover the realities, and sometimes I think, I strongly believe, that because of the security situation in Iraq, because some of us are really jaded, we're not actually conveying how horrible the situation is on the ground. I mean, I can agree with the debate that we're not getting the full picture because the full picture is so bad in Iraq. And still reading newspapers, you get A, B, and C is bad, and D and E is good, so this is kind of balanced reporting. It almost reaches the point where there's nothing good. I mean, what? Kids are going to the school, but kids used to go to the school before the war. Electricity? Getting 2 hours of electricity instead of one? It's absurd. This whole debate about good news versus bad news is absurd. What's happening in Iraq is really bad. And he goes on, so this debate accusing the media of not conveying the good news is such a, I mean, do those people know what we were digging through when we go to Iraq? just flying into Baghdad, driving, just doing the simplest, the basic, simple things, just being in Baghdad, existing in Baghdad, is one of the most dangerous things you can do in your life, let alone covering it. So the effort we put into writing a story, any simple story, is enormous. And none of us, I don't know any journalist who accepts taking such a risk just to manipulate the truth or write the bad news because you have this hidden agenda. People are getting killed on a sectarian basis. People are leaving their neighborhoods. The lines are there. Militias are roaming the streets. Despots are functioning in Iraq. People are getting kidnapped. People are getting killed. Everyone's getting killed. Barbers, professors, officers, insurgents, Americans. Everyone's getting killed. So what are you going to write?
Mike Hoyt is the executive editor of the Columbia Journalism Review and editor of the book Reporting Iraq, an oral history of the war by the journalists who covered it. Steve Paulson spoke with him.